Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 14. King Puru Uva, enchanted by Urvasi. Text 7 through 9. Translation. King Indra, accompanied by all kinds of demigods, joined the side of Brihaspati. Thus there was a great fight, destroying both demons and demigods, only for the sake of Tara, Brihaspati's wife. Text 8. When Lord Brahma was fully informed by Angira about the entire incident, he severely chastised the moon god, Soma. Thus Lord Brahma delivered Tara to her husband, who could then understand that she was pregnant. Text 9. Brihaspati said, "You foolish woman! Your womb, which was meant for me to impregnate, has been impregnated by someone other than me. Immediately deliver your child. Immediately deliver it. Be assured that after the child is delivered, I shall not burn you to ashes. I know that although you are unchaste, you wanted a son. Therefore, I shall not punish you." Purport. Tara was married to Brihaspati, and therefore, as a chaste woman, she should have been impregnated by him. But instead, she preferred to be impregnated by Soma, the moon god, and therefore she was unchaste. Although Brihaspati accepted Tara from Brahma, when he saw that she was pregnant, he wanted her to deliver a son immediately. Tara certainly very much feared her husband, and she thought she might be punished after giving birth. Thus, Brihaspati assured her that he would not punish her, for although she was unchaste and had become pregnant illicitly, she wanted a son. We are in a very inconceivable part of the Bhagavatam. This section of Bhagavatam will be a test of your bhakti fidelity. Or should we just quickly get through this section? Those of you who are encumbered by advanced education, what can you think about all this described in such a chapter? It's not simply the dealings between Soma and Tara and Brihaspati, but how did everything start with Lord Gobardakshai Vishnu from the lake of his navel sprouting a lotus flower upon which Brahma was born? This is supreme artistry. But there's a natural tendency in us to reject such descriptions as mythological because such activities by Garbhodaksha Vishnu are not within the realm of our everyday ordinary experience. And my point is that there's something about everyday ordinary experience that desensitizes you to the transcendental reality. There's something about ordinary everyday experience that makes foremost in your life simply financial needs, sensual needs, social needs for respect, and so forth. So what we consider to be ordinary everyday reality is actually quite detrimental. But we have difficulty seeing that because of attachment. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, our mundane attachments start to dissipate. Srimad Bhagavatam Sakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyantasta Abhadrani Vidunoti Sirhitsatam. This is Bhagavatam mysticism. If we can just not be so aggressive with our mundane knives, which are supposedly sharpened by everyday daily experience, but actually we become dull by everyday daily experience. But there's something about contact with the material energy that causes us to become proud by our everyday daily experience. I know, I've studied, I have I've seen, I have life experience. And what is Shukadeva Goswami's conclusion about all that? Pashyanapi na pashyati. Although you're sufficiently experienced, still you cannot see. That is the great benediction of material civilization today. You're sufficiently experienced. You studied hard, but you still can't see what's going on. And we start with Lord Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then there's Brahma. Brahma, as you heard in the beginning of this chapter, had a son named Atri. And Atri, believe it or not, impregnated his wife Anasuya with his tears of jubilation. Now, what do you think of that? You have gone to great institutions of learning. You have done some experience in the corporate world, and now you're hearing about such incidents in Srimad Bhagavatam. The natural tendency, of course, is since I cannot do these things, and since I've never seen such things, how can these things exist? And if people start to believe these things, what will be the hope for them for material advancement? Everything has to be measured in terms of how it contributes to economic advancement. Otherwise, what is the use? That is the bottom line today. Forget integrity. Forget being genuine. Forget wisdom. Just think of the financial bottom line. How does our acceptance of various notions contribute to the consumer society? All right, so Atri Muni impregnated Anasuya with his tears of jubilation, and then Soma was born. Soma is described in the Bhagavatam as a demigod in charge of herbs and the stars, and or sometimes he's considered the moon deva. There's a note given by Srila Prabhupada that in other parts of the Vedic texts, it is stated that Soma was born from the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How do you resolve all this? The Acharyas point out that some descriptions of Bhagavatam are from different millenniums, and therefore things were done differently. So in one millennium, Soma is born from the mind of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In another millennium, he's born from the tears of his father impregnating his mother. If Krishna is Purushottam, the Supreme Person, why should he do everything the same every time? It's amazing. Srila Prabhupada brought up this point even in reference to the fall of the jiva issue. And devotees were battling. Did the jiva come from Brahman? Or did the jiva come from Vaikuntha? And on and on they went. And in the midst of Srila Prabhupada's pointing out that originally we are with Krishna, and separation from Krishna is impossible. He said, and by the way, Krishna doesn't have to do things the same way every time. In the midst of this intense philosophical description, analyzing the jiva issue this way and that way, in the middle, just one sentence, Prabhupada wrote, anyway, Krishna doesn't have to do the same. He doesn't have to do things the same way every time. This is personalism. But just see how our minds are predisposed to, there must be a mechanistic process that is executed perfectly the same time, every time, the same way every time. There must be such a process. And we are making a great concession to admit that there is an ultimate designer with an ultimate design. How great we are. Therefore, how can you stretch our credibility by daring to suggest that the design could be different, differently executed at different times? In other words, there has to be a limit. How much can our minds handle? We are pious persons. How much can we assimilate? How much can we digest? The Bhagavatam is meant to constantly expand the limits of your conceptions. By constantly hearing Bhagavatam, you become humbled. You realize that your mind is shackled by so many conscious and unconscious conceptions, which you arbitrarily accepted, yet you cling to them very dogmatically. By hearing chapters such as this, you become freed from that clinging to these arbitrary conceptions. It's amazing when we analyze our foundational assumptions and see that indeed they're just that, assumptions. But how can the ordinary person means your everyday materialist, either materialist by innocence or by deliberate choice, how do they get the fortitude, the courage, the incisiveness to cut through all this, all the assumptions that are forming their consciousness? It's too much. It's too much for people to do. And they have their financial pressures, they have their physical and mental pressures, they have their social pressures. And at the same time, they're supposed to get to the root of all the issues about existence. Most people will say, I can't handle it. It's too much. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is the easy way how to cut to the chase, the easy way how to get your fingers on the pulse of reality. You do pay a price by hearing Bhagavatam. You have to suspend your dear most mundane conceptions. But if you allow the Bhagavatam to do its wonders upon you, you'll feel quite relieved of those material burdens, those conceptions, and the spiritual world will begin to open up to you. This is why Lord Chaitanya stressed to his followers, all those who come after Lord Chaitanya, that Bhagavatam is your life and soul. Before you are liberated, read Srimad Bhagavatam, and after you are liberated, go on reading Srimad Bhagavatam. All right, what do we find has happened? Soma. Anyway, what Soma is showing is that life in the heavenly planets amongst the demigods, you know, does also have some problems. We shouldn't take these characters to be ordinary, these personalities to be ordinary. Soma, Brihaspati, so on and so forth, Indra. But the way life is on the heavenly planets is such that an intelligent person wants to directly go back to Godhead. The demigods themselves admit this in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. They say, if we have any punya, any pious activities left in our account, we want to take birth on earth. Particularly, we want to take birth in part in India, and particularly in a holy place in India, because we can very easily perfect our life. The human form of life is very short compared to demigod life, and conditions on earth are mixed happiness and distress. It's a middle planetary system. Whereas conditions in the higher planets, it's just too heavenly. We can't get sufficient motivation to give up our material attachments. Therefore, we'd rather take birth as a human on earth. If we look at the ISKCON world in general for the past 40 years, 45 years, if you know about the ISKCON world situation, you'll see it is a fact that, generally speaking, yatras in very, very nice, very pleasant material regions and situations, they've always had great difficulty. Very difficult to attract people to bhakti, and very even more difficult to hold persons in bhakti. That's interesting. Just like, take Hawaii. Some or other, it happens to be part of my GBC zone. So, Srila Prabhupada said, if there's one place on earth that's heaven, it's Hawaii. And